All right, welcome in. Talking everything 49ers except Brandon Ayuk, because at this point, no one has any new information on Brandon Ayuk. We got a little bit earlier today, thanks to Mike Garofalo, but we've already covered that, and we're not going to be one of the places that's talking about this for hours and hours. We got to talk about the rest of the roster, because the 49ers are returning tomorrow for what I believe is block five of training camp. Practice on Wednesday, practice on Thursday, practice on Friday. They just added a new player, Nick Williams. Chase Daniel broke that news. I'm guessing that the 49ers are going to move Kalia Davis to injured reserve. I've put Kalia on IR list right here to make room for Nick Williams. I believe that's how the new rules are going to work, by the way. They're planning on Kalia returning this season, even though they're going to be putting him on IR before the roster cut down. And the way that works is that there's two return designations for guys that are placed on injured reserve before the cut down. That rule is new. So Kalia Davis needed to be replaced. As you can see here, Kalia Davis is or was essentially the 49ers' fifth defensive tackle. They've got Malik Collins, Javon Hargrave, Jordan Elliott, Kevin Givens, and then it was Kalia Davis, but now it's Nick Williams. The guys behind him on the depth chart are Evan Anderson, T.Y. McGill, and Shaquel Brown. There was a question entering all of this that was posed as, okay, is it going to be Shaquel Brown? Is it going to be Kalia Davis? Is it going to be Evan Anderson? Are one of these guys going to step up and become the defensive tackle that the 49ers need to challenge in that established core? And Kevin Givens is the fourth member of the established core for defensive linemen for the 49ers, defensive tackles, because somebody's going to get hurt at some point. Injuries are a thing. And also you want to raise the ceiling of the room. You know what you have with Kevin Givens, but you also, you know, Kalia Davis was an extremely explosive option, and he's not going to be an option now for about half the season. And it's an option that if he pans out, he's going to raise the ceiling above somebody like Kevin Givens. Just you hear the comparisons to DJ Jones. You hear the former status as an inside linebacker in college for Kalia Davis. That's explosiveness that the 49ers can use on the inside. Well, Nick Williams, now the veteran who's played for Brandon Staley, 34 years old, was with the Chargers last year, was under Brandon Staley back in the day with the Chargers in 2018 and with the Bears in 2018 and 2019 and the Chargers last year. Now he is with the 49ers. Speaking of Staley, let's hear a little bit from Brandon Staley talking the other day about the defensive backs, mainly the defensive backs, because that's where Staley is working. But I know this is an assistant coach that has drawn a lot of interest, and this is a video that I haven't yet had a chance to share.
But now it's like, hey, can I execute it and do it well and hold myself to that high standard? Because it's not easy. It's not easy to be a fundamental player outside and inside, but that's what we're asking him to do, and he can do it. And so it's just being, I think, demanding and challenging, and, you know, I think giving him the vision of what it should look like, so then now he can keep working hard at the technique day in and day out. And I think you're seeing it. You know, we still have so far to go, but, you know, hopefully we can continue to, keep improving his game, because he's having a good game.
It's not like Shaquel Brown was a secret before last year, or, you know, but he took it. He took another leap.
Yeah.
And obviously you knew, I'm sure, plenty about him. But
yeah, we did.
Since you got here, I mean, have there been things about him, whether on or off the field, they're like, hey, this guy's, I don't know, even more special than I thought? Or?
Yeah, definitely. I would say exceeded expectations. Had a very high opinion of him. Had to go against them. I think the best thing about him is he's improved every year in the NFL. He's improved. And I thought last year was his best season. I thought you really saw the ball production. I think he'd always had outstanding cover skills. He was a good tackler, but I thought you saw the ball production last year. Mm-hmm. I thought he showed real toughness last year, playing through injury down the stretch and, you know, really giving this team a chance to play for a Super Bowl. So, again, he's another guy with experience. I think he's gained more and more confidence in his belief that, hey, I'm one of the best in the game. And, again, it's just us, you know, challenging him because he's got a lot to give, but he's got a lot of confidence in himself, and that's something that you need at a number one corner spot. And, you know, we're going to keep tapping into that. He's having a good camp, and just got to stay at it with him.
He said if he'd had a couple more picks, he should have had a couple more picks, and he should have, you know, could have been defensive player of the year. That sounds like a number one cornerback mentality, right?
Yeah, he's got the cover skills. You know, I think you know, we had a bunch of good receivers where I was just that, and I think like in the, you know, even in the free agency process, I mean, he's challenged the best receivers in the NFL and has been up to the task. And that's how you really measure corner's value, is how they defend the best people. And but I think last year what he was able to do is get the ball production too. I think he really fits our culture here in terms of the toughness and the physicality. He's an outstanding tackler. He's physical, and you know, and he's dependable. You know, I think that that's something that's really underrated. Is this, you just know what you're getting with him. And again, I think he continues to improve. I think the best is still to come with him.
I asked you a little bit about Fred last time.
Yeah.
You heard that. The value of a corner in the NFL is determined how they cover the best guys in the league. And what's really interesting to me is that Brandon Staley got the C. Charvarius Awards All-Pro season last year from an outsider's vantage point. He was still the head coach of the Chargers. So he wasn't his coach, and he saw that ascent, and he noticed that detail. The Charvarius Ward was doing what he did against the best receivers in football. So the 49ers have a weapon in Charvarius Ward. And hey, you know, I said and I promised that we can talk everything 49ers except Brandon Ayuk, but this ties in. If you can get that Brandon Ayuk deal done at a rate that is fiscally sustainable for the team, you're going to have that much better of a chance to re-sign Charvarius Ward and/or D'Amador Lenore. If you look at the 49ers secondary, you've got 1 year contract or final year of the contract for this guy, Charvarius Ward, final year of the deal for this guy, Isaac Yiadom, final year of the contract for D'Amador Lenore, final year of the contract for Auk Yassin. So the players who are under contract are depth pieces. They're promising young players, but it's guys like Renardo Green, Darrell Luter Jr., obviously Ambry Thomas, but he's hurt now. We're probably going to be moving Ambry Thomas onto the IR list on this roster right here. Samuel Womack, who seems to have stalled in his progress up the 49ers depth chart. That started off so promising for Womack in 2021. But or 2022, is that when he was a rookie? It was a couple years ago already. I think it was actually 2021. I think he had that big preseason game against the Green Bay Packers, and that was when Trey Lance threw that touchdown pass against the Green Bay Packers. Anyway, you get the idea. They've got a lot of starters and a lot of established players, but they only have 1 year left under contract. So the 49ers now are looking on how to replenish that defensive backfield for years moving into the future. A nice asset to have is Brandon Staley coaching these guys up. He's got some good experience coaching versatile DBs. The 49ers, in fact, they're running Renardo Green similar to D'Amador Lenore. They're running him inside. They're running him outside. He's getting to do a little bit of both. If you watched the game the other day, Renardo got to play the base package outside cornerback, the nickel package slot cornerback role. We've actually seen a lot of that in practice too. If you watched the game the other day, you also got to see Dominic Pooney's rise. 14 pass blocking snaps. Sorry, that was a text message and it was extremely loud. I've muted the TV. 14 pass blocking snaps and no pressures allowed. With no pressures allowed over that period of time, the 49ers got to see some of the anchor that has been so impressive with Dominic Pooney here early in his NFL career. We saw it at Kansas, but we wonder about the movement ability, because one thing that makes Aaron Banks, for example, at left guard, such a liked figure in that offensive line room amongst the coaching staff, is that he's got a really quick burst for a big guy out of his stance. And that helps the run game a lot. They love that about Jake Brendel too. Brendel, the starter at center, Aaron Banks, the starter at left guard. When the 49ers in some of their zone blocking plays, they call for the center and for the guard to hit a spot on the second level extremely quickly, much more quickly than other offenses will ask for that to happen, which is why you've typically seen 49ers offensive linemen be lighter than other line, especially on the interior, where those guys can have that explosiveness to get to that second spot, sometimes 5 yards away from the line of scrimmage. Brendel came out of college at UCLA. Now, this is in 2016. This is a long time ago. So he's since added some strength and added weight. But he's only 290 pounds when he came out of college. That's why he's an undrafted free agent. But he had some of the best athleticism scores that you'll ever see for a center. Now, Banks was a second-round pick because he's much bigger, 300-plus pounds. But if you watch the tape of Aaron Banks playing basketball in high school over in the East Bay, El Cerrito High School, he could really move. 49ers love Aaron Banks' movement skills. Still, the pass protection from both Brendel and Banks definitely regressed last season. So the 49ers, with right guard being a problem throughout the entirety of the Shanahan era, the 49ers really need right guard to be better. So they picked Dominic Pooney, third rounder, and I think the hope for him was, okay, versatile lineman. At the very least, he can be the number six lineman his rookie year, but I think there was upside that the 49ers saw. Maybe this guy can impress us. Maybe he can start, because he has been such a mature asset wherever he's played. First, it was at Central Missouri. He's actually the youngest of three brothers. So he went to Central Missouri, which is a D2 school, played over there. One of his older brothers played for the Dallas Cowboys, got a cup of coffee with them in the offseason. But Pooney, really, he knew his place. He knew that he was the youngest of the three. I think you could tell. I mean, he was raised right, and you could tell that he had a couple older brothers. The competitiveness, you know, made him be able to punch up, right? You've got guys who, when you're playing tackle football and on the grass, and you're playing all these games when you're younger, you've got guys who've got a physical advantage over you. So you can't cower away from a challenge. You have to be ready to elevate your game. I think Pooney was raised that way. And then he shows up at Central Missouri and he's able to contribute almost immediately. He transfers to Kansas, and that's like the big jump that he made, right? He goes from D2 to D1 college football, Big 12, Kansas, starts immediately, plays every single O-line position, whether it be in a game or at practice, over his time with the Jayhawks, and in two seasons doesn't give up a sack. So he makes a major jump. I mean, that's from D2 to D1 is a huge deal. He makes it completely seamlessly. He talked to Lance Leipold, the Kansas coach. They said that within a couple weeks, they didn't even realize that this guy, if you looked at him on the practice field, they didn't realize this stalwart had been in D2 the year before. So he's already made the jump once of that magnitude. Now there's another jump that he's trying to make of big magnitude as well, and that's from D1 Big 12 football to the NFL. It's the same jump that Brock Purdy had to make from Big 12 football, Iowa State, to the NFL. And you never know how that jump is going to go. I don't think that we have the final answer in Dominic Pooney yet, but we have some data points, and we're getting more and more data points as time goes by. The first data point has been all these starts that he's made during training camp, and he's looked solid. He hasn't looked out of place. Another data point has been the one-on-one stuff that he's done. He's looked good even against guys like Malik Collins. And the third data point is this preseason game. Again, 14 pass blocking snaps, no pressures given up, really strong anchor. And you know, there's a lot of people saying, oh, wait, his PFF score. Here's one thing. Let me say this. I respect PFF. I use PFF, but I know what numbers to take seriously and what numbers to take with a grain of salt. PFF has a lot of extremely, extremely useful hard data. So hard data is something like 14 pressures given up. Okay, he's pass blocked or 14 times, and he didn't give up any pressures in that time. So 14 snaps, no pressures given up. That's objective data. I mean, you might argue a little bit about what the definition of a pressure is, but there's not all too much wiggle room. And PFF is consistent with the way that it grades that. You go through the rest of the website, and there are a whole lot of other metrics that are more advanced that you're not going to see in a normal box score that are awesome. What people get hung up on and what they need to be able to separate in their minds from this kind of stuff are the grades in PFF. Grades are going to be inherently subjective, especially compared to the objective stats that PFF also tracks. So supposedly, and I didn't even see it, but supposedly people said, oh, but Dominic Booney had a bad run blocking grade. Is the person doing the grading familiar with the ask of Dominic Booney on every play? I just mentioned that guards and centers in the 49ers system sometimes have to reach block. Sometimes they have to get 4 yards upfield in the snap of a finger. So they could look bad if on that particular play, it's not set up for that to happen. Is PFF grading these plays knowing that the 49ers have very unique asks of their offensive linemen? What exactly is the methodology? Because it has to be standard across all linemen they grade throughout the NFL, which just makes it a fool's errand. At the end of the day, you're not going to have fair grades for offensive linemen if the scheme that they're blocking for is different across teams, but the grading is the same across teams. So I don't look at the grades because the grades are inherently deceptive. I look at the tape. I watch the tape of Dominic Booney. I'll look at the objective statistics like the pressures allowed, because that's something that you can actually chart without moving into subjectivity. But it's really, really important that you don't conflate the two. So Pooney, by the objective metrics, was really good in pass protection. If we want to watch the run blocking, we probably shouldn't be looking at the grade of someone else, but we should instead be watching the tape of what Dominic Pooney actually did do. And most famously, he pushed Jordan Mason into the end zone. But on that play, he pull blocked. I mean, it was a pull from Dominic Pooney. He moved from right to left. You only pull with a lineman who you think can move. Now, they could still be trying Dominic Pooney out. It's the preseason. I get it. But he's started so many practices now because of injuries at that position. And I thought that he put some good pull blocking on tape during that Jordan Mason touchdown, that I think you've got to be optimistic if you're the 49ers that he can grab that starting spot. Now, here's more of the dynamic for the 49ers at the guard position. John Feliciano is week to week, not day to day, with his knee injury. Spencer Burford is out currently with the broken hand. Those are the two other contenders for the right guard spot. Both of those guys are currently on the shelf. So the meat of training camp has Dominic Pooney working with the other four starters along the offensive line, and I guess maybe the other three since Trent Williams is not around yet. But the meat of training camp is Dominic Pooney in that spot. He's building cohesion. He's the one taking the snaps in front of Brock Purdy. And I think that's not a small deal moving forward for Dominic Pooney. I'm going to open it up to some questions here, and then I got a few other things that I'll go through. Just wanted a little bit of a freewheeling show. I got back late from dinner today, so that's why we're starting a little bit later. So type in your questions, and then we will go from there. 49ers Q&A. Awesome. We got somebody from Seattle watching. It sounds like we got questions about the canceled joint practice. Well, the canceled joint practice happened because the 49ers had about 23 players out, not all due to injuries, but many of those guys due to injuries. That was supposed to happen on Thursday and Friday. It will no longer happen then. I may still fly down to Orange County to see my buddy on Saturday on the day off, but the 49ers will play the Saints on Sunday. Go for Broke asking, who's Pooney's primary backup? Well, once the dust settles, say that Pooney is the starter, they'll have both Burford and Feliciano back. I don't think that those guys have long-term injuries. Feliciano's the broken hand. Burford's the broken hand. Feliciano is the knee issue. Nick Zekel, if he doesn't win that center job, and I think that Jake Brendel's the odds-on favorite there, Nick Zekel can play guard as well. Ben Bartsch has been battling for one of the swing interior offensive line spots. He's available. And they're developing a youngster in Jarrett Kingston, who's their sixth-round pick. So they actually have quite a few bodies here that they can insert into the lineup. What do I think Conley's role is going to be if we The 49ers, you say, Proteus West, if they manage to re-sign that guy that we're not talking about right now. Oh, Conley last year, let's get the hat straight. This hat right here. There we go. Is that better? Yeah, I think it's better. Conley has carved out a role even with Brandon Ayuk on this football team. Because you talk about what he did for the San Francisco last year. First, I say that he's a great gunner. He talked about that yesterday. Two, you're going to need a guy to spell Brandon Ayuk at that X receiver spot, and Chris Conley can do that. So I've got him right behind Ayuk on the depth chart. They, and you know, Conley being the professional that he is, with the ability to play multiple different positions for the 49ers. When Deebo Samuel went out last year against the Packers, it was Chris Conley that was able to slide over into his role and make everything work for this football team. So he can play the X, he can play the Z, he can play the F. I think that naturally he's an X. He's built like that, and obviously the versatility is good, and he's got the burner speed coming out of Georgia. I know it's been a while, but Chris Conley can still move. So he can play that X position. But I think that the beauty of Chris Conley's game is that he can play multiple positions, and he's just a guy that you want in the building. He's a culture kind of guy. Those of you who heard Chris Conley talking yesterday, I'm sure you were impressed. What do I think about throwing Mustafa at outside linebacker? Not necessarily outside linebacker, but more of a star position. The versatile. When you heard Brandon Staley talking, I talked to Staley actually about Mustafa. Let's play a little bit more of Staley here because we're going to get to my question, I think, at some point of this video. It's a little bit of a longer one. I'm trying to fast forward here to Staley listening to me about some of this stuff. Brandon Staley has coached Derwin James, who played safety but then came up closer to the box. He obviously talked about Jalen Ramsey in the star position, playing both outside and inside cornerback. Brandon Staley has loved adaptability over the course of his coaching career. And if he's a whiteboard guy now for the 49ers, you look at Malik Mustafa and it seems like exactly the type of player that would be a good versatile chess piece. It's a little early to talk about that. And if we can get to the Staley video, that explains why it's too early to talk about it, because first he's got to learn the safety position. But as soon as they cut down the roster and they know that Malik Mustafa is fully comfortable at safety, which I think he's definitely getting there. I mean, he was directing traffic. He was telling Renardo Green where to go pre-snap during the Titans game. If he could get there, he is exactly the type of guy that can rove around the field. That's how they got Talanoa Hufanga involved in the defense as the third safety in 2021 when he was a rookie. And I think that could happen with Malik Mustafa here in 2024.
Have you, I know you have some history coaching some guys that were adaptable in the back end. Have you seen any of that could translate to this level, and may that help him earn some playing time, the fact that he could play in a number of different spots?
Yeah, David, I think he's proven to be trustworthy. I think he's really learned the scheme quickly, which I think gives you a chance to, you know, maybe move to another role. You have to know the defense before you can start to move around. So I think he's done a really good job at safety, showing that he can command the back end of the defense. I think he's shown that he can play in the deep part of the field, that he's a good tackler. And now he just needs the time on task. So I think, you know, growing into those roles is kind of what happens with rookies. And as you narrow your roster down, then you can really select how you want to use these guys. But he's off to a good start in camp.
There you go. So off to a good start in camp. That was actually before the big performance that we saw from Malik in the game at Tennessee. So worth keeping an eye on. I talked about Chris Conley's reliability. How about Eric Saubert? Put on the tape from the 49ers Titans game. Eric Saubert is flattening people. So, I mean, he's going to be, and just in practice, every single time that first team takes the field, and I think that's a more important data point, is practice for the tight end position. What are the 49ers running out there every single time that the first team takes the field? Eric Saubert has been the fixture at tight end, too. Everybody wants to talk about Braden Willis, and I think that he's had a nice camp. He had a nice offseason. He might actually give the 49ers some receiving upside here. It's developing into that. But you want reliability, old veteran reliability first and foremost to that blocking spot. And Saubert, I think, does that for the 49ers. The fifth round of the 2017 draft has produced three current 49ers: George Kittle, Eric Saubert, and Trent Taylor. Isn't that cool? For the long time there, only one of those guys was on the roster. For a while, two of them, Trent Taylor and George Kittle, were. Then Trent Taylor left. He was gone for a few years, and now he's back. But look out for Eric Saubert. Reliable, just like Chris Conley. How about we hear from D. Winters? You haven't seen this yet. I got some footage for you in the locker room in Tennessee from D. Winters, who had a performance filled with ups and downs, and he talks about both in the locker room.
Overall impression, like that first half, I guess?
Definitely some things to clean up. Haven't really, you know, tackled anybody in a year, so, you know, I kind of knew that was going to be rusty, but definitely going to improve on that and, you know, build up that and ready to go next week.
Aside from the tackle, was coverage also an issue that you weren't, like...
No. Coverage wasn't an issue. You know, we had busted coverages, but, you know, we just got to go out there and play our scheme.
That hit on Levis, get the juices flowing?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, it kind of got, you know, me going and kind of got excited, and definitely was a huge part, you know, that first half.
What would you have corrected on the Pollard play, the third down play?
Yeah, I think I just would have attacked him more downhill. You know, I kind of gave him too much cushion in the coverage. But Will Levis put it on him, and, you know, he made a play, so.
You had a TFL a little bit later on a run. Did you diagnose that pre-snap?
Well, yeah, actually I was supposed to blitz, but I saw two pulling guards, and I was like, okay, well, I'm not going to run into them. So I kind of just, you know, went to go behind them and try to make a play, and they gave it to him, and did what I did.
What did you make of Malik's fourth down here?
Oh, that was huge, you know, especially coming from depth and coming down there and getting that stop for us. That was major, and, you know, that was a momentum change for us.
Did you know, I mean, he was known for that in college. Mm-hmm. This is a really deliver by wax. Did you guys know about his reputation? Obviously, he hasn't been able to really show anything like that in practice.
Yeah, no, I didn't know anything about Malik until, you know, he got here, but definitely seen him in practice, and so definitely was excited to watch him today, and he made some plays, and, you know, definitely excited to play with him for sure.
You checked your phone yet to see if there are any text messages from Fred Warner?
No, I haven't. Not yet. Yeah.
Fred probably has something to say, though.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah.
Thanks, sir.
So that was good stuff from D. Winters. My favorite part of that interview was when he talked about the tackle for loss, which I thought was his most impressive play. I know a lot of people talking about the big hit on Levis. That was great. But the tackle for loss, what a heads-up play, because that wasn't actually what he was supposed to do. He was supposed to blitz, but when they started pulling two guards because it was a run to the right, he decided to go off script. He didn't want to get swallowed up by the guards. You can't be a robot in this game. You have to follow instructions. I get it, but you also have to be able to adapt in the face of chaos, especially if you're a linebacker. You're dealing with a lot of chaos, especially when it comes to defending the run game. So we see exactly that happen with D. Winters. That's a situation where if he follows the play call down to a T, he's going to get destroyed by a couple pulling guards. But instead of getting destroyed by a couple pulling guards, D. Winters improvised. He got around the offensive line, torpedoed into the backfield, and got the job done for the 49ers. A nice tackle for loss, and I think an exhibition of a guy that is starting to take some chances, starting to go off script, showing off that athleticism. We saw a high-ceiling, low-floor game from D. Winters, but he can raise that floor with experience. He's a raw player right now. If you take a look at the roster and what they might do at linebacker, do not rule out Demetrius Flanagan Fowles. I think he's actually your favorite to be the linebacker 3 right now for the 49ers to start the season. But if D can continue getting reps, continue working at things, I think he's a guy that slides up into the 49ers linebacker 3 spot sooner rather than later. He's got that kind of talent. And, you know, the game, I think, was very encouraging the other day because he's starting to show that real upside, and that is progress because we didn't see that much from D. Winters last season. Now we're starting to see that, and now he's got to eliminate some of the negative plays. As far as he missed the I asked him about it. You watched it there. I asked him about the missed tackle on Tony Pollard. What would he do differently? He said he would have taken a more aggressive angle before that ball was even thrown. He was talking a little bit about the pass defense breakdowns that the 49ers had. There was the Calvin Ridley play where D Winters got turned around. He's obviously got to stay home, be in a little bit better position in the zone. That's also something that he can fix. But that's why the preseason's exciting for reasons like this. It's not exciting if you care about wins and losses, because those don't matter until September 10th. It's not exciting if you want like true scoreboard drama, right? But it's exciting when you're talking about guys trying to ascend up the depth chart and either make the team or earn themselves some actual playing time in the regular season. And I think D. Winters was a phenomenal, phenomenal case study. All right, we're going to listen in on Brian Fleury, 49ers tight ends coach, talking about his position room. I know I talked about Saubert a little bit ago. Here's Brian Fleury talking about those tight ends.
Learning and adapting and like not repeating mistakes. So, I mean, he's got a long way to go, but he's definitely, like I said, he's in the conversation for sure.
Warner and Dwelly were both pretty established guys on this team, but they didn't catch a lot of passes the last 2 years. It's just been talked about a lot, I know. George doing almost all the receiving. How important is it to get somebody else or a couple other guys to get in the mix in that way?
Yeah, you always want to have a skill set available so that, you know, God forbid something were to happen to George, or, you know, as he's playing more and more years, if you can take some of those snaps off of him, you know, that's a benefit. It's kind of how each game plays out and how Kyle sees the roster, and how, I mean, we have so many weapons that, like, part of that is, you know, just the amount of other people we have to get the ball to who can be effective. Not as much a knock on Charlie and Dwelly, and they accepted the role that they were in and did it very well. And, you know, we'll see what this roster looks like when we put it on the field in September, and, you know, who the ball's going to go to, that's yet to be figured out.
Wait, you mentioned Klein. And by the way, it's an honor to talk to the one of the co-stars of Receiver.
Stop. My 13-year-old told me I didn't look stupid.
So. Yeah, I know, exactly. You're brilliant.
He's 13. That's a big thing.
Yeah.
My family was like, who is the position coach? I mean, that guy's awesome. But with Klein, I mean, obviously it's not, you know, your typical path to the NFL. It's not a high level of college. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you said he has a long way to go. Totally understandable. I mean, but is blocking like the biggest part for him, or is it just kind of everything?
It's the speed of the game, I think, more than anything else. You know, when you, like, I played at that level of football, so it's just different. Like, it's not a knock on his strength or technique or skills. It's just things happen so much faster at this level when you have this caliber of player flying around the football field, and it just takes a little bit of time to adjust to that. I do think he'll get there. I haven't seen anything from him physically that I think is lacking, but it's just a matter of how much time it takes for him to adapt. He's done a good job. He's not repeating mistakes, and so, you know, we'll see how quickly he can evolve and put himself in a position to compete for a spot. You know,
I'm not sure about Bobby Turner. Why is he still coaching at 75?
You gotta ask.
I did.
I mean,
he gave me like a 22-minute answer.
I'm sure. He hasn't lost a step, and he has no loss for words. He's awesome. I love spending every day with Bobby, and like, we have a great relationship. It's fun to work with him. It's fun to learn from him, and he's, you know, fun to jab each other every once in a while.
People have said lovingly, you know.
That's Brian Fleury, 49ers tight ends coach. You heard him talking about Mason Plein, said that he thinks that Mason is physically ready for this position, but there's obviously a lot of development to go. That's why when you look at my roster, I really think that Mason Plein is headed for the practice squad. Just so raw. You know, he's coming off of being a basketball player just a couple of years ago. Raw player, has great size. They think he's got good speed. They think he's physically ready for this tight end position at the NFL level. There is an empty spot, right? They just waived Logan Thomas, or released Logan Thomas, the veteran. So the empty spot here, because they've taken four before, it's going to be interesting which way that goes. I think Tonjes has actually really impressed them. He's actually played backup fullback at some of these practices. Latu, boy, I don't know. This is the last chance for Latu. They're not giving 3 years of chances to guys, even if they're third round picks anymore. They've released or waived third round picks before. So Latu is somebody to keep an eye on. He's really going to have to impress over the course of these next two preseason games. But I think you've got Kittle, Saubert, and Willis on the in, and the 49ers have always carried four tight ends in the past. So that leaves one more spot I do think Plein more likely a practice squad guy, but we shall see. There's also still time to develop, especially for a guy who's as raw as Mason Plein. The trajectory of improvement can be fairly sharp. That's Fleury on the 49ers tight ends. How about the sandwich of the day? Little Vine, North Beach. They do a different one every single day. Today's was pastrami. So you go to Little Vine in North Beach. It's a little wine shop. They've got an awesome sandwich. And this was at the San Francisco Italian Athletic Club. I was working and eating at lunch. You can see the SFIAC logo in the back. So Little Vine in North Beach, good spot. Tuesday is pastrami day. The bread is good. The cheese is good. And the meat is good. Everybody can go check out Little Vine in North Beach. I mean, you probably can't go into the Italian Athletic Club if you're not a member. But it's a good spot for me to eat. A good spot for me to work on something cool that's going to be coming up in a couple days. All right, that's it. Just I wanted to do this for everybody. I know that there's a lot of content out there on Brandon Ayuk. I wanted to do something where we didn't talk about Brandon Ayuk. I get that it won't get as many views. I understand that people everywhere are rushing around the only at Brandon Ayuk news. I get that that's mainstream, but we're going to be a little more hipster with it here. I did give you plenty of Brandon Ayuk content today, by the way, if you want to go check that out. But this is for those of you who like the rest of the football team, who want to know about the in-depth part of the 49ers. So if you like the in-depth aspect of the 49ers, hit the like button. We're over 75,000. We're growing toward 100,000. That 100,000, we've hit the big milestone. Now we're going for 100K. It's going to be the next big goal. Hit the sub button, and we'll talk to everybody soon. Training camp resumes tomorrow.